Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, and I am thrilled to say we are back in our spacious L.A. studio, and I am joined by Jay Williams out of New York and the spiciest guy in Texas, NBA champ Kendrick Perkins. Welcome to you both. Coming up, the NBA and the players are working toward allowing social justice messages on jerseys. The undefeated Mark Spears is going to join us to discuss the plan and what potential impact this could have. First, though, we start with the Lakers. As Woj reports, J.R. Smith is finalizing a deal to wear the purple and gold in Orlando, replacing Avery Bradley's spot on the active roster. Smith last played in the NBA on November 19th, 2018, guys. Here is a look at the roster as of now with J.R. included. This is just a fascinating collection of wings alongside LeBron with Danny Green, Alex Caruso, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Dion Waiters. Perk, does J.R. to the Lakers make sense?
Yes, it do, and I think the Lakers have struck gold. Listen, you're adding another champion to the team that has the most championship experience. One thing about J.R., Rachel, that he has a unique talent, and guess what that is? Shooting the damn basketball. He can shoot the ball 55, 70 years old. The thing I love about J.R. is that he's been working his tail off. I've been communicating with him through this past year and a half, and he's been working his tail off in and out the gym every day. And I think this is a golden opportunity for him and for the Lakers because they need spacing. I could imagine with him and Danny Green being on the court together, how wide open the paint is going to be for LeBron and Anthony Davis. Also, J.R. have an effect where he don't even need the ball in his hands, or he don't even need to score the ball to help the Lakers win because they have to honor him. He could just play as a decoy. And then on another thing, I think that this is a Dwight Howard story in the making. You know, before the Lakers had signed Dwight, when they first signed Dwight Howard, the Lakers was getting criticized. Man, what are y'all doing? Dwight is washed up. And look, Dwight has been balling. It turned out great for him. And I see this happening with JR because anytime JR back is against the wall, he rises to the occasion. I know when they traded, just think about it. When he got traded from the Knicks, JR was thrown in that package.
Yep.
The Cavs were initially trading for Shumpert. And what happened was Shumpert was injured and JR embraced that opportunity and he flourished well with the Cavs and helped them win the title.
Man, Perk, it sounds like you've got it etched in stone that the Lakers are about to win a championship right now with the excitement I hear in your voice. I haven't heard you talk that long about a team in a long time, brother. I will say this. Rachel, I like the J.R. Smith move. I think that this is a collection of talent that you have to have trust in one of the greatest leaders we've seen in the game of basketball, and that's LeBron James, to get everyone on the same page. So I will be additive to what Perk's comments were in saying this. Don't sleep on Dion Waiters. Now, I know that J.R. Smith, great addition, KCP, wings, Danny Green can knock down. But I know he has some issues in Miami. I know there are things he had to work through along with playing time and losing weight and issues with, you know, the coaching staff and Pat Riley. But if he could channel and be focused, his additive qualities of putting the ball down the ground, creating, and then adding guys like J.R. Smith, Danny Green as another slasher along with KCP, It's becoming a collection of talent that where LeBron James, he'll have to do things a lot down the stretch. But if you can have pieces that can do things throughout the course of the game, I love the direction the Lakers are moving. I love it.
This kind of feels like a box of chocolate team. And that's aside, of course, putting aside LeBron and AD. We know what we're going to get from them. But there's a bunch of guys. You don't know what you're going to get. And by the way, that could go in either direction. And JR is a great example. At the height of his career, you didn't know what you were going to get from him. And that could go either way. He went on tremendous cold streaks. And yet there were NBA Finals games that LeBron and Kyrie Irving could not have won without JR Smith. So I don't know what I'm going to get when JR gets on that court in Orlando, but boy, I'm so excited to find out. This is going to be so much fun. We do have
Rachel, I'll tell you this real quick too. If you're playing against the Clippers though, there's no more doubling LeBron or people sitting in the lane. You got shooters now, viable shooters. You have to stay home. Like Perkins said, it opens up the lane for guys to attack.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we do have guys, more players.
Leave them open if you want.
We do have more players opting out of Orlando. The latest is the Nets' Wilson Chandler, who says he wants to spend more time with his family, particularly his grandmother, who raised him. Now, Chandler is the fourth Net to opt out. He joins Kyrie, KD, and Nick Claxton, all of whom are rehabbing from injuries. Meanwhile, Chandler also joins a growing list of NBA players declining a return to play without specified injuries, including Trevor Ariza, Davis Bertans, Willie Cauley-Stein, Avery Bradley. One player who is still undecided, reigning sixth man of the year, Lou Williams, who said earlier this month he was, quote, 50-50 on a return to play. Williams says he's concerned resuming the season could distract from the nationwide movement for social justice. Jay, do you think Lou will end up playing? And if he doesn't, what would potentially losing him do to the Clippers' chances at a title? Because they are one of the title favorites.
You know, Rachel, I'm always going to be real with you. I have no idea. This is such a conflicting moment in our history for a lot of individuals that don't want to take away from, you know, what things we're actually fighting for as it relates to social injustice. And that's ultimately going to have to be a subjective decision by Lou Will. I will tell you that if Lou Will does not play, I think that's a major blow. And I know that the Clippers are a loaded team. I know you got Reggie Jackson. You have other pieces that are viable and that can score the ball. But, you know, look, you're talking about the NBA's all-time leader scorer in points off the bench. You're talking about a guy that had a career high this year in 5.7 assists per game. And him handling the rock, him making plays for other people, knowing that he was a living bucket down the stretch. If he chooses not to come back and play, are the Clippers still a really good team? They're still a team that could win a title? Yes, I just think it makes it a lot more arduous for that squad without Lou Will.
Well, listen, Jay, Rachel, the Clippers cannot win a championship without Lou Will. I'm sorry. Their chances go down the drain. They cannot win without Lou Will. We're talking about Lou Will, the six-man guard after Jamal Crawford, a guy who's a walking bucket, arguably the best scorer on that Clippers team. And it raises a major concern for me because a guy that's 50-50, even if he goes down to the bubble and play, is his heart in the right place? And that's a major concern because when you're trying to win a title, you need everyone in 100%. And I'm not questioning Lou Will and his love for the game, but I'm questioning the moment right now. Even if he goes down to Orlando, is his heart there? Because his heart right now is for a bigger cause, which I applaud him on. But this raises a red flag for the Clippers. Either if he goes or if he stays, to me,
I don't know,
a red flag, and
you
they
know
cannot
Lou Will.
Win a championship.
If he decides to go, don't you think that he will be 100% in? Once he makes the decision, don't you think his focus will be with the team?
Well, I'm not saying that, Rachel, but what I'm saying is if his heart is somewhere else, he could still go out there and play. But if his heart is with the Black Lives Movement, and I applaud him with it, it's a difference. Like, he could still be on the court, but it still could not have that sense of urgency like he would have if he wasn't thinking about this situation.
Perk, I would have to say, knowing Lou Will for his career, if Lou Will chose to go down to Orlando, he'll give it his all. And I still think that there's a way, even though, you know, you can think it's a distraction, there's a way you can turn that into a motivation, too, considering you're going to have the biggest platform in the world to continue to push your message. So I think Lou Will has proven that he's professional enough to handle that responsibility. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on that.
Also, you get that playoff money. You could donate it wherever you want. Scratch. That's some good coin right there.
I'm not questioning it, though. I'm not questioning if he'll be 100% in. I'm talking about, like, if he's 50-50, that means his mind is somewhere else. I'm not saying that Lou Will's is not going to give it his all. All I'm saying is that it's hard when your mind is, like, his focus right now is on the Black Lives Movement and Black Lives Matters movement, and that's important. I'm not knocking him for that, but I'm just saying to be 100% in, and he's saying that he's 50-50 right now, that's a concern to me. I'm sorry.
I get it. I'm looking forward to hearing from Lou Will in these coming days. I also want to get to Jazz All-Star center Rudy Gobert. He told French newspaper L'Equipe that details of his battle with COVID-19, including feeling, quote, ants in my toes. Seriously, guys, it makes me uncomfortable just to read that sentence, as well as slight lung inflammation. He also explains how he is still recovering from the virus, saying, quote, the taste has returned, but the smell is still not 100%. He said, I can smell smells, but not from afar. I spoke to specialists who told me that it could take up to a year to return to normal. So, Perk, seeing those comments from a star player who was diagnosed with the virus more than 3 months ago, Should the long-term effects of COVID-19 be considered a bigger deal as the NBA approaches this restart? And a number of players, remember, have tested positive, even if they will be recovered by the time they get to Orlando.
Yes, it is, Rachel. It should be a bigger deal for everyone in America. Just thinking of that, like, right, he's saying that he can't smell, he can't taste. Like, that's a huge deal that Rudy Gobert, like, he had it 3 months ago, like you said, and it should raise a red flag, you know, that this is serious and that, you know, we have to take all cautions and make sure that we cross our T's and dot our I's, which I think, you know, the NBA has done a great job. Like I said before, they're going down to a $1 billion bubble, Rachel. I think they'll be okay.
Hey, you know, I pray and I hope that everybody will be okay. I think that's still TBD to see how they'll have to handle everything. And, you know, I would say this, that to be, you know, on your point, Perk, it's for the world, man. And I just want to make sure that everybody at home understands that we're still collecting data on this. So when people say, well, there's no long-term effects, blah, 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 you don't know that. That's not a fact. That is your opinion. Unfortunately, we live in a world where opinions become facts. And, you know, so as this relates to Rudy or other guys, you know, you don't know what the repercussions are going to be down the line and how the league's going to need to handle this. And I will say this, you know, the league has been a major vehicle for a lot of African-Americans, if we're bringing in the Black Lives Matter movement here, to become wealthy. And look what it's been able to do for Michael Jordan to own a team. So, you know, I do have to put my trust in Adam Silver here that he has tried to collect as much data as possible. But ultimately, Rachel, you know, it's going to be up to him when enough is going to be enough. If it gets to that point where they'll need to pull the plug.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. And as you say, Jay, no one's had this long term. No human on the planet had this before 7 or 8 months ago. So we don't know about antibodies. We don't know about how long effects last. And we will be finding out in real time with Rudy Gobert and the rest of the guys who have had this. All right, coming up, the Bucks, Lakers, and Clippers sit as favorites when the league restarts. But which team could prevent a Milwaukee-LA final? That's what everyone's odds makers are expecting. We'll get to that next. Right now, though, let's continue our countdown of the top plays of the season. We're up to 33. It's time.
Anthony Davis over the top of Baines and just flushes it. That was nice.
Man, he catches the ball around the dotted line, a little circle where you draw the charge. And then he reaches into the bucket. That's just not fair.
Dragic on the keeper, lobs it for Jones Jr. He batted it in and drew the foul. A little volleyball for the airplane man.
I mean, just an unbelievable individual athletic play by Derrick Jones Jr.
That was unbelievable. That really was.
Came up with me.
The Jump is brought to you by Pizza Hut. Order today at pizzahut.com.
Welcome back. JJ Redick posted this photo on Twitter asking, if this ended up, did he finish a, quote, dunk shot? Yeah. We decided to go back into the archives, and we know for a fact, yes, JJ can dunk. And he did so in a game, you know, it was only 9 years ago, JJ. This got our super producer, Michael Bodmer, thinking about five of the most unexpected dunks in NBA history. Take a look at our list.
Now the Mavericks looking to cut it to three. Kidd takes it all the way for the dunk this time. No finger roll.
That's the point. That's exactly the point I'm trying to make. Even if you can't get there and dunk it, don't finger roll and lay it up over the top.
Remember, Divac playing with 3,000 on the turnover. Ellie chasing Jason Williams. He shot Ellie right there. Ellie thought that he was going to block that shot. And Jason Williams sent that down.
Double team. Here's Price as an opening.
Roddy Pike! Oh, you don't like that! You don't like NBA basketball! Wow! The dunk of the year by Roddy Pike! Oh, my!
defense by a great athlete, Webster. Miller running out. Oh, Andre Miller! Hey. With a rise and flush.
Come on now, not bad for your point guard.
Well, the people in Denver are saying, wait a minute, you played here 269 games. We never saw that.
Everybody wants to make a long shot.
And Rondo had made one before. Oh, my! Uh-oh. Chris Paul! Uh-oh. Above the rim! And the foul! How about that?
That's not the deal, though, Bob. He dunked on Dwight Howard. He didn't just dunk. He dunked on Dwight Howard. Uh-oh! Yes, sir! Yes, sir!
Props to the broadcast team there. It was not just a dunk by Chris Paul. It was a dunk on Dwight Howard, thank you, and the foul. That was pretty awesome, guys. I don't know, was there ever a game you were in where someone dunked where you were like, what'd he just do?
I almost caught Yao Ming once, Rach. I'm telling you, I was a couple inches off. If I caught, and you know, I already had some animosity because, you know,
of
all the years in the draft, there was a 7'6 guy that year. Yeah, I was trying to get that. That was almost my moment. Almost.
I love it. All right. Well, I want to move on to the new NBA schedule because it was released on Friday. 88 games with 22 teams to finish seeding the playoffs and figuring out who will be the eighth seed. Early notable matchups include Clippers-Lakers July 30th, Celtics-Bucks on July 31st, and Ja versus Zion as the Grizzlies and Pelicans duel August 3rd. So, Jay, which game are you looking forward to the most from the remaining schedule?
Rach, I'm going August 3rd. I'm going the Memphis Grizzlies versus the New Orleans Pelicans. And we both, Perk and I, have been on multiple shows talking about how excited we are about the Pelicans. He may say they're trying to give Zion that 8 seed. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, though. Memphis, though, getting Jaren Jackson back, getting Dylan Brooks, and then Justice Winslow.
Which Brooks, Jay Williams?
I like the grit and grind. Excuse me?
Which Brooks? Dylan Brooks?
Yeah, Dylan Brooks. Yeah. I didn't say Dylan Brooks.
No,
I
you did. You did. I'm saying that they're glad they have the right Brooks.
Yes, fair. That's fair. Fair. I just like the way this team is built, though. So watching those two young teams go at it, considering other teams may take players off or let players rest, not those two teams. That's going to be a major matchup.
Yeah, listen, Rachel, I don't have one game that I circled on the schedule, but I'm watching all eight of the Rockets games. The Rockets are that dark horse contender that I'm looking at. You know, when Daryl Morey come out with the statement saying that he got James Harden and Russell Westbrook and he feel like they could win the championship because of those two, and rightfully so, I'm watching the Rockets because they're sitting at the sixth spot in the West. And they could drop to the seventh spot if they don't get their act together. Or they could move up to the third spot, which I think they would do. And I just think the Brodies have it on their mind. James Harden dropping 20 pounds. And you could drop Russell Westbrook anywhere in America at any gym, and he go play with that Mamba mentality. I don't care if it's at the YMCA, LA Fitness, the Wellness Center, wherever it's at. So I'm looking forward to the Houston Rockets. I'm telling you, that's the sleeper that everyone's sleeping on. Except for Jay Will. He's been rolling with him, too.
I'm now picturing Russell Westbrook in, like, you know, kindergarten, elementary school gym somewhere, just showing it to the third graders.
But yeah.
We know that he would.
Rocking everybody's shot. He wouldn't care.
I'm looking forward, as you said, to how all that seeding turns out. And, of course, the race for eighth in the West, because there are still several teams in contention. You've got the eighth-place Grizzlies. They're followed by the Blazers, Pelicans, Kings, Spurs, and Suns. And if any of those teams can get within four games of Memphis, there will be a play-in game on August 15th where the ninth seed would have to beat the eighth seed twice to make the playoffs. It's like a two-term knockout. So the Pelicans received what appears to be an easier schedule than their peers. But, guys, please note, their schedule is actually harder than what the Pelicans' schedule would have been when the NBA suspended play. So the NBA front-loaded a lot of those Pelicans games, big matchups, the idea that Zion was going to debut as a rookie. Of course, he got injured, but that was the idea. So they already played a lot of their harder games. Their schedule on the back end was supposed to be easier, and it's actually not quite as easy as it would have been. Jay, with the schedules out, though, who is your best bet to make the eighth seed in the West?
I'm going to go with Memphis. I'm going to give it to Memphis. And that's going to hurt me because I have a bet with Jalen Rose that I had New Orleans in it, and I would get a free suit. Rachel, there's something interesting about NO, and I know that they have the second easiest schedule. But it's, I don't know if they have the maturity yet. And now, granted, you're playing, you know, eight games in a condensed period of time, You would think they're actually playing for something, but I've also seen this team have lapses throughout the regular season. Now, granted, we're talking about you just unplug them, now you're plugging them back in. They could bring that energy and that sustained effort, but there's something about knowing how to win down the stretch in closing games. Jrue Holiday and J.J. Redick are good at that, but is the rest of the team experienced at that? I'm not too sure. I like the position that the Memphis Grizzlies are in.
Oh, I got to disagree with you, Jay. I got to roll with the Pelicans. Man, look, okay. When you talking about closing out games, I could put the ball in Jrue Holiday's hands. I could put the ball in J.J. Redick's hands and tell him to fire me up a three and possibly get a four-point play. And guess what? They have one of the most prolific scorers in the game today, a first-time All-Star in Brandon Ingram. And look, you know what? A lot of people don't give Zion a credit for this. Yes, he's box office, and he's going to give you the highlights, and he's going to put up all the monster numbers, 23 and 13 or whatever the case may be. But Zion plays winning basketball. He has a high motor. He makes winning plays. You see this guy's second effort, jumping out of bounds, diving for loose balls, going after offensive rebounds, getting deflections. So I'm looking at this Pelicans team, and they're deep. They're deep. They got a nice bench. You got the kid Hayes, who's super athletic, brings a ton of energy.
Hayes,
you got Etuan Moore. You got Etuan Moore, who could give you 15 to 20 points in a game. So I'm looking at this Pelicans team, and I'm like, man, they could go and get that A spot, and I'm sold on them.
Yeah, look, people are saying, hey, the NBA is trying to manipulate things. They want Zion in that first-round matchup against the Lakers. But again, Pelicans' strength of schedule, while it's easier, not as much easier as it was what they were supposed to have. And by the way, Ja Morant would make a fantastic first round matchup with the Lakers. Can you imagine him dunking all over the place? And don't count out Portland.
Rachel,
I'd like to see Damian Lillard go up against those guys.
Rachel, what part? Who in the media said that the NBA was trying to skew this towards New Orleans? Who said that?
Perk. Okay. I'm not going to get into the other shows you guys are on.
That was me.
I'm not going to get into that.
That was me. That was me.
Perk, he's got all the receipts. I'm sorry. What can I tell you? All right, guys, coming up, NBA players want to make a statement on social injustice in Orlando. We will discuss one idea with Mark Spears from The Undefeated after the break. But first, here is today's distant replay. This is a huge trade from this date in 2004.
Here's the deal about the deal that was supposed to, you know, be dealt last week. Well, the deal is finally dealt. It's official, an all-star for an all-star. Tracy McGrady headlines a cast of players leaving Orlando, going to Houston, passing in the night. Steve Francis and a handful of guys Disney-bound. Here's the whole deal on the deal. Magic get Francis along with underrated Ketino Mobley and underrated Kelvin Cato. In exchange, Houston gets T-Mac, the workman like Juwan Howard, the reliable Tyronn Lue, and D-Reese Gaines.
Defense, obviously, to some is not your strength. We know you can score. You're a two-time defending scoring champ. But are you concerned about perhaps some adjustments you'll have to make with your defense?
Not at all. Not at all. I'm getting tired of people saying, oh, he doesn't play defense or this and that. What happened, just ask Glenn Robinson when we played in that Milwaukee playoff series. I mean, I don't mean to point him out like that, but... You know, I can play defense. It's tough on one guy when you got to score 30 and 40 points for your team. And you also got to defend the best players.
This is a moment. We got to keep pushing forward.
We want change. We want justice.
Some of the injustice that we've been seeing is not okay.
What do we want? Justice! What do we want?
Let us be perfectly clear.
Black lives matter.
Black Lives Matter. Really good stuff there from the NBA. All right, welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still here with Kendrick Perkins, Jay Williams, and we are now joined by senior NBA writer for The Undefeated, Mark Spears. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Glad to be here.
Nice to see your face, Mark. We have seen athletes in other sports like the English Premier League and NWSL wearing Black Lives Matter shirts protesting prior to games. I wanted to ask you about what you reported this past weekend about NBA players wanting to go a step further and wear jerseys with personalized social justice, social cause, or charity messages on the back instead of their last names. And this idea was first publicly floated, by the way, by the WNBA's Angel McCautry a week ago. Mark, how did the NBA guys start talking about it, and how firm is it that it's actually going to happen?
Well, Rachel, Chris Paul is really, really excited about this. He's been talking about it with the Players Association for a while. Now the NBA is involved and Nike's involved because they're the ones that make the jerseys. So there certainly is some concerns, like will the player say something that could be deemed offensive? Ja Morant said something over the weekend on the post, the social post that caused some ire and he took down. So that's certainly a concern. But yes, I do believe that this is going to be. It's going to be about social issues. It could be a charity, something personal to guys. But it's something that they're hoping could happen and be worn through the entire season.
Wow. And Jay, I want to ask you about what Chris Paul told Mark. He said, quote, "We're just trying to continue to shed light on the different social justice issues that guys around our league continue to talk about day in and day out. People are saying social justice will be off everyone's mind in Orlando, but with these jerseys, it doesn't go away." So, Jay, do you think that this is an effective initiative to keep the conversation going?
I think it's a great start. You know, Rachel, when people before said that sports would serve as a distraction, I wasn't a part of that group. I believe that you can still play your sport, having the biggest leverage of the platform that is going to exist for NBA players and still sustain the movement. I will say this, though. I think that's a great idea. It's an incredible idea for social justice. But at the same time, I still would like to see the NBA come out with a plan and sponsorships come out with plans on what they're going to be doing within their own respective communities and owners talking to different lobbyists about pushing for different legislation. I do like that this is a subset of the plan to continue to sustain the conversation, but I also would like to know what sponsors and what the league as a whole are going to do to continue to elevate the plan into a different stratosphere. I think that's, I don't want to be remiss and say that this, what we're talking about here is not important, but the bigger plan is more important in the bigger scheme of things.
No, that's really good nuance, right? Because if symbols are the only things that we do, that is going to be a loss and not what this movement is about. But symbols are still important, and we know they're important because the people holding on to the old symbols are fighting sure very hard to keep those flags and statues and names and other things like that. So it does all work in concert. I agree with you, Jay. Perk, as a former player, I wanted to know, how creative do you expect guys to get with the option to place social justice messages on their jersey? You heard Mark say that John Morant had to sort of take back a tweet. This would obviously be vetted through Nike and through their teams. But with it's these guys' voices. It's what they want to say.
Hey, Rachel, listen, Ja Morant reminds me a lot of myself. I probably would have had to take back some, too. But I love the idea, to be honest. I think when you look, when you think about it, listen, we're talking about NBA players. Guys, you know how much of an honor it is to have, like, just to get your first NBA jersey as a rookie and see your name, Perkins, on the back. But now to empower it even more and have, you know, George Floyd or something like that to for change. It speaks volumes. And I think, you know, with NBA guys having hundreds of thousands to millions of people following them on social media, I know for sure I will be posting mine before the game, my jersey on Instagram, Twitter, letting the world know, you know, pregame. And I think the media and camera crew have to do a great job also doing timeouts and, you know, and stoppage of plays of zooming in and getting a close up on the names of the back of the jersey. I love the idea, me personally. I would be all in for it if I was a player.
Well, I expect these jerseys to become very popular sales items as well for Nike. So I certainly would challenge them to donate proceeds from these jerseys to the Black Lives Matter movement and to causes that these players are trying to support.
Again.
donate the money. That's all we're saying. Mark, the Jersey Initiative is a good start, as Jay noted, in terms of keeping issues relevant. But there is more. What are you hearing in terms of other tangible plans for the league and Players Association to address social injustice?
Well, we started with the PSA. You guys saw that. When you watch an NBA game, I think it's going to be like, I don't know if you guys watched the BET Awards last night, but I did. It was basically a social justice message throughout the whole 2 hours. Well, for 3.5 months with the NBA, you're going to get that message, whether it's PSAs, whether it's things on the floor, whether it's electric messages. Fred VanVleet mentioned perhaps they might put a black fist or perhaps Black Lives Matter on the floor. I think they're going to be inundated with so many messages over the course of this season that you're going to be woke. Time is over with. And I think also what Chris Paul wants to do is every time a guy does an interview after a game, hey, before I answer that question about the game, this is why I had this on the back of my jersey. This is who the person is, and this is their story. Oh, and when I'm done talking about that, then ask me about my 40 points.
I love that. I can't wait to see all of that unfold. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. These two other guys will be back with
me
in the next segment. Coming up, we're going to take a deep dive on the Sixers. We're going to discuss their chances in the East, the pressure on Brett Brown, and whether Orlando will help or hurt them since they've struggled on the road, but there's no fans in this road. Yeah, we'll get into it. It's the debut of our previously on segment next on The Jump. The basketball tournament is back Saturday, July 4th at 3 Eastern on ESPN with a fully quarantined 24-team single elimination bracket for $1 million. Winner take all, first prize. All right, guys, we have a new series debuting here at The Jump. I'm very excited about it. We are going to be taking a bunch of the teams that are competing in Orlando and catching you up with where they are since it's been so very long since you've seen them on the court. This is like when your favorite TV show goes away for a hiatus, and now we're back. We're going to start with the Philadelphia 76ers.
I don't think I'm talking trash this year, so.
I've heard that from you before. Last year, in the middle of the season, you were like, I'm done. Previously on The Jump. Okay, let's just say he appeared to be flirting with the idea of one day joining ex-teammate Jimmy Butler in Miami.
Jimmy's in the organization's head right now.
Simmons, hesitation, drives inside and finishes. And the foul.
They do so well at home, and then they don't bring that energy on the road.
I don't know if Ben Simmons is going to play again this year.
JoJo, not right.
I was basically playing with one hand.
How patient that the Sixers should be with Embiid and bringing him back?
They don't have a choice.
We're disappointed in how we've played lately.
We were soft.
And I'm not saying that you can't win the East from six, but it ain't where you want
to
be.
To me, it just doesn't fit. I don't want to hear about that they don't fit. That's crap. It's not personnel, it's personalities.
They are the team that can push Milwaukee. I like Brett Brown a lot. He doesn't get it done now, he's gone.
Ooh, there's good stuff going on there. A lot of drama now that we're caught up. I do want to start with the Sixers' health, guys. As you saw when the league shut down, Ben Simmons was sidelined with nerve issues, and his lower back, Joel Embiid, suffered a left shoulder injury and had just returned to action when the league suspended play. So, Perk, with both of these players expected to be healthy and ready to play on the Orlando campus, do the Sixers have a legitimate shot in the East?
No, Rachel. Listen, a lot of people was on the Sixers bandwagon at the start of the season. Guess who wasn't? I wasn't, because I'm not a fan of Brett Brown's. Here it is. You hear Tobias Harris last week. He come out and say that they have chemistry problems. You heard Jimmy Butler have issues with him last year. Also, Al Horford. So you know what that goes to tell me? It's not the players. It's Brett Brown who's the problem. And he hasn't put these guys in position to be successful. And that's a problem. I don't want to hear about Ben Simmons and Joel can't play together. No, both of these guys are generational talents. They are studs. You should find a way to make these guys play together. And once again, they are a championship team at home and a lottery team on the road. And where they playing at, Rachel? At a neutral site. So, no, I don't give them a chance at all. I'm saying it right now here on your show, The Jump. I don't give the Philadelphia 76ers a chance at all to win it or even going to the finals.
Tell us how you really feel.
You know what, Perk? Yeah, that's how you really feel. I will say if they don't get far this year, I think you'll see Brett Brown before you'll see him go before you see them break Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons up. But if there's anything that this year has taught me about life, is to expect the unexpected. I have no idea we were going to have a pandemic. I had no idea we were going to have the uproar that we had. And I will say Tobias Harris going on First Take a couple days ago and talking about them having chemistry issues. Maybe the best thing to happen to the Philadelphia 76ers was to have this hiatus. You know, sometimes for teams, they need to be unplugged and plugged back in. Getting healthy Joel Embiid, getting Ben Simmons healthy, Tobias Harris maybe finding a rhythm, you know, Josh Richardson getting healthy. Do they struggle to shoot from the outside? Yes. But on any given night, this team could compete and could beat the best teams in the league. We saw them beat the Bucks on Christmas Day. So the question is consistency. Can they find that? I'm just going to say this. They're a dark horse. I'm not saying they're a dark horse to win it all, but they're a dark horse. If they hit their stride, they're a dark horse to mess up the East. They have the talent to do so.
Well, and I do want to add that they just added Brian. Yeah, go ahead, Perk.
No, Jay think he's slick. The only reason he wishful thinking right now about the 76ers is because he picked them at the start of the season. I know, Jay Will, you did your homework, and I got my receipts also. You picked them, and that's why you sitting up here wishful thinking. By the way you started off this first segment about the Philadelphia 76ers and that little speech, oh, man, that was so cute, but I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. I know you, Jay.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
I know
it,
you, Jay.
It's a win-win scenario for me, Perk. It's a win-win.
This is the thing with you guys both at home. You can keep all the records. They just can be at home on the desk in the filing cabinet. It's all good. I do want to add that the Sixers did just pick up Ryan Brokoff. He was a 40% three-point shooter with the Mavericks the last couple of seasons.
Tell him, Rachel.
That is a team badly in need of spacing. I don't know how much he is going to help or how he will do, but it's better than not having another three-point shooter there. There is the home and road issue, though, and Perk, you brought it up. The Sixers were a league best.
Got receipts on you.
Yes, you do. The league best 29-2 at home, but on the road, they struggled mightily with a record of 10-24. So, Perk, do you think the Orlando setup will be more like home or road for Philly? I mean, they're not going to have people booing them, I don't think.
It will be a way for Philly. It's like being on the road. It's a neutral site. And here's where they dropped the ball. The guy, the heart and soul that they should have did everything in their power to keep, Jimmy Butler. He was their leader. Yes, he's a feisty leader. But he was their backbone, their heart and soul, and they dropped the ball. Also, by letting J.J. Redick walk away in free agency. So I just don't see it. I don't know who's their leader. Right now, Al Horford, I could say. But him and Brett Brown wasn't seeing eye to eye, with Brett Brown shuffling him in and out of the lineup. So I'm just not sold, Rachel. I'm sorry. They're in a neutral site, and I don't give them a chance at all.
Perk, I'm going to quote you what you said at the beginning. You said it's like being on the road. It's a neutral site. Neutral site is neutral site. All I'm saying is that one of the best defensive teams in the league with their wings, I hear what you're saying about Al Horford, staggering minutes with Joel Embiid. Brett Brown does have some challenges to figure out. But just know a team with their sides, their length, if they are committed on the defensive end, I guess there'll be some questions offensively. But I wouldn't want to see that team if they hit their stride. That's all I'm saying. If Joel Embiid, think about this, Perk. If he finds a way to play at a high level and does not get injured along with some other players, you're telling me they can't beat any team in the Eastern Conference?
Well, let me ask you this, Jay. This is what I'm going to ask you. Joel plays great at home because he feeds off of what? The energy from the crowd. So you telling me that you're gonna depend on Joel away in a neutral
Fair
site
point.
With no fans, and you're going to tell me you're going to get the same Joel Embiid?
Look, he's an energy
guy. I hope
guy.
So. We can see the villain Joel Embiid, Rachel, like he told you he was going to be. I mean, if he lives those words that he told you, being the villain, I like that Joel Embiid.
It is so hard to say. There's no doubt he's an energy guy. Joel has fed off of, right, the fact that his own fans have booed him. So Who knows? And we don't know what the NBA is going to do. I know that the NBA announced, Adam Silver said on Friday, that fans are going to be able to push a button and the stands will light up depending on how many guys are pushing, how many fans are pushing, how many, but I don't know. I just want to know if they're going to have people catcalling at the court. We got 33 days. We're going to figure all this out. We will get it for you. I want to get to what the Jump recommends for today. Tim Bontemps showcases how the Raptors are already practicing in Fort Myers, Florida in preparation for the Orlando restart. But will that provide an advantage 5 weeks from now? We will discuss that right after the break. Stay tuned. Coming up next, it's 20 minutes of Jalen and Jacoby, highly questionable and around the horn. A 2-hour sports center is at 5 o'clock with the PTI guys joining at 5:30, and we cap the day with SVP. All right, before the break, we recommend an article from Tim Bontemps on the Raptors. Because of quarantine rules in Canada, guys, didn't make sense for the Raptors, mostly American players, to try to cross the border twice to start training camp. So instead, they just all met in Fort Myers last Monday. And while the Raptors get ready for the season, Fred VanVleet just met the media and asked how difficult it would be to enter the bubble. The Raptors guard was clear on where he stood in terms of social justice issues, but cited financial incentives to play. Here is the quote. It's terrible timing, but that's been 2020 for us. We all know the right thing to do is not play, to take a stand. Morally, yes, that makes sense. But life goes on. We're all young black guys. None of us want to give any money back. I don't think that we should. I think that money can be used in a number of different ways. This is not going to end this summer regardless or over the next few months. So, Jay, that's a lot there. What is your reaction to Fred VanVleet's comments?
Yeah, I have a hard time saying it too, Rachel. He's always been, ever since, you know, his time at Wichita State, I've known him since he was in college. He's always been, you know, very on point about this is how it is. And it doesn't make it fair. It doesn't always make it right. But I'm going to tell you how I see it. And the reality of this matter is, and I know people may not like this terminology that I'm about to use, Rachel, is that this is one big time experiment that we're watching in real time. And these athletes are guinea pigs. And that is, these are harsh words. And it's tough because I know they make a lot of money and people are saying, well, guinea pigs make a lot of money. But like all these guys have families. All these guys have, you know, their concerns about this. And, you know, the reality is they are going down there. And this is about money. So it's not just as easy as let's not go or this and that. It's a really complex matter. And I give a lot of these guys credit. I mean, to go to a location that you're putting your trust in the league to take care of you while you leave your families at home, it's a very, very challenging situation to be in.
All I'm going to say is this, Rachel. Back the Brinks truck up for Fred VanVleet. He know how important this is. He's coming up and he's about to get that bag. And, hey, look, I know it's difficult to leave your family, but Fred VanVleet know he's going out to get his paper, and Toronto going to have to back the truck.
Absolutely. Thanks to you both for joining me. Jump is back tomorrow. See you then.